What up, everyone? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Off the Record. Listen, only a sucker pays their tickets and pleads guilty. Don't be a sucker. You got to understand something. Moving violations are a big business, not just for the police and the highway patrol and those kinds of folks, but also the insurance company. And a ticket that you receive, plead guilty, and pay can very often multiply several times over in insurance premiums, dude. It's a problem, and it's a problem I have personally dealt with because remember all those bull run videos I did where I got all those tickets and how funny that was? Yeah, my insurance premiums went up for a decade. That's how that system works. The point is, fight your tickets. Off the Record, guys, is where it's at. Off the Record is a service that helps match you with a well-qualified attorney to fight your tickets. Off the Record's attorneys have a 97% success rate, and their lawyers cover 90% of the population of the United States. Here's what you do. You go to offtherecord.com/TST, or use code TST10, that's TST10, on the iOS and Android app. Either of those will get you 10% off any service you use with Off the Record for the next 3 years. So sign up now, make that account, it's there when you need it. Listen, being on the side of the road is not the time to start thinking about getting an attorney with the lights flashing in your face and all that. Have it ready, have it in the phone, have it in the back pocket. That way you know if you get pulled over and you get a ticket, 97% chance that's not going on your record. And if it does, you don't actually have to pay. Money back guarantee with Off the Record. So go to offtherecord.com/TST or use code TST10 on the Off the Record app. 10% off all your services until May of 2023. Also, we're brought to you by Dylan Optics Sunglasses. Guys, you know those awesome matte finish sunglasses I'm wearing in every single video? They don't just look cool. They don't just look different. They work great. The NIR lens technology. Man, this stuff, you know, I'm out in the sun, I'm out in the mountains, in the desert, all day long, driving for hours on end. When you live near the beach in Los Angeles, as it turns out, every time you go home at the end of the day, you're driving directly into the sun. I learned that when I moved here. It's inconvenient a little bit, but the Dylan Optics sunglasses really save my eyes for long days in the sun. And they look cool. They got metal frames, plastic frames. They have prescription available. So go to thesmokingtire.com and click on that Partners tab. You'll see the Dylan Optics banner right next to Off the Records, actually. And if you use that Dylan link on our website, we will send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt with every purchase of Dylan Optics sunglasses for supporting the people who support us. Alrighty then, on this episode, my friend Spike Ferriston, host of Spike's Car Radio Podcast, a legendary Hollywood writer, wrote some of the most classic episodes of the series Seinfeld, and wrote for Saturday Night Live, wrote for David Letterman. He has been around, and he is one of the Hollywood Porsche folks. So check him out. Here it is, Spike Ferriston on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Yeah, Spike Ferriston calling from Brentwood. What's happening?
I'm here. I'm excited to be with you, Matt.
Thank you.
I love hanging out with you, man. This is fun.
Thank you for calling in, man. It's good. Yeah, I love you.
Is this a call-in, technically? This isn't a call-in. This is a video conference of some kind.
Do you have a better word for that without using the brand of the software that we're using?
Zoom and giving,
Zoom. Hey, we pay them.
We pay them?
Yeah. We pay a monthly subscription.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We don't need to also promote them. If they want to hook us up for free.
Have you tried any of the other interfaces like WebEx or anything like that?
We've gotten some people on FaceTime, actually, which has worked out okay. Zoom seems to have the best audio of the lot.
Skype still exists.
It's amazing. Spike, how did Zoom show up and decimate Skype in a matter of 6 weeks?
No idea. No clue.
Oh, I tried
see,
to use
you
Skype,
guys,
that's why.
You fixed the audio for me because you just made me put in the little ear cleaner thingies. And I always have that echo. I've been trying to figure out what's wrong with my Zoom podcast. And this is it.
The answer is headphones.
That's as much as I know.
Yeah, headphones are very important. Yeah, totally. That's the problem. The one of the coolest things about being able to do Zoom and, you know, the situation forcing us to use this technology is being able to go global. We've had guests calling in from London. We've had guests, you know, call in from the convenience of their own homes and whatever. And also partial guests. We can have a guest do a half a show, which is great. You can't really do that in person. But the downside is you're sort of dependent on the equipment of the person at the other end and their internet connection, which is tough.
Yeah, and you're also depending on the audience wanting to stick with this kind of shoestring type of entertainment, right? I was just reading that the television shows that are on right now, all of these late night hosts shooting in their garage, the ratings are starting to dive as people realize, I don't really need to watch them that badly.
Are you keeping up with any late night programs that are filming at home right now?
No, none of it.
You bailed out of all of it?
I like everybody a lot, but it feels a little pathetic to me. I'm happy that they can keep their crews employed and that their writers are making money. So, I don't want to crap all over it, but I'm not going to watch it.
Without laughter, though. Like, when they deliver a punchline, you know it's a punchline, but there's no laughter. Yeah. It's very jarring for me.
Yeah, it generally isn't anyway.
It's a little. John Oliver,
studio,
no audience
button,
is tough.
You press it and everybody goes, hey!
John Oliver's
like
tough.
That's
yeah,
good.
It's tough without it. Yeah. I was watching that. Have you seen Trial by Media on Netflix? It's good. Mm-hmm. It's about crazy court cases that played out in the media. And the applause button made me think of the first episode, which is about the Jenny Jones Show murder. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, where the guy revealed his secret crush on another dude, and the dude, like, got really embarrassed on TV, obviously, and the hitting on him continued when they got back home, and the guy murdered him. But that
brings me to something, Matt. You don't have a gun at home, do you?
No, baseball bat next to my bed.
Okay, then I have to tell you something.
But
that's very Warriors, Matt.
But Jenny Jones said some really creepy shit about.
Yes.
She's like, say what you'd want to do to this guy, and she starts talking about whipped cream and stuff, and then the guy hits the applause button, and the audience is like, yeah, it was fucking wild shit,
and it ends in a murder.
Yeah,
this is having a production company. This is our biggest nightmare, that something like that happens. This is what we fear, and it's really what we're fearing with the pandemic and COVID. That's our, you know, it's that. Times however big your staff is.
Yeah.
Someone's going to come to work and while you're making a show and die. It's awful.
Or be like Matt Damon gets stranded in Ireland.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if I'm flash forwarding to just TV and film production, I think that's the level that's going to be the hardest. Even when you get your guilds, you get your union deals done and everything else, then you got to get Matt Damon to show up. Right?
No, do you think studio audiences... Studio audiences are kind of screwed for a while, huh?
Oh, that's easy. No, that's simple. That's the unemployed and Marines and some of the homeless folks that just want to make $100 for sitting in seats and applauding when you press the button. That part's easy.
Fair. All right.
The star.
Yeah.
Come on down. Hang out with Spike Ferriston on this crowded set. Yeah. That's the part I don't see happening.
It seems like, based on this past weekend, that people are itching to get out and drive their cars around LA, though. Bills was like popping off 2 days in a row.
Yeah, it's crazy. To use a phrase or a word you use a lot, it's mobbing. People are mobbing.
Yeah.
They're everywhere. But Sundays has turned into a fast and furious, I don't even know. Maybe you know who this crowd is, because they're not the usual crowd of guys. Half of them seem like the criminal car guys.
Yeah, I don't
know. The ones who are doing 100 miles an hour in the parking lot, that crowd.
I have seen more people
gathered together.
I've seen more people going fast in the parking lot. I really have.
Right. Actually, what is that?
I don't know.
I think the exotic rentals are open again because an M8 yesterday was barging down Ocean Ave at like 60 miles an hour. And I was like, how does this 22-year-old have an M8 right now? Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Turo crew, which
there
I
was
like.
There
most
was all kind of
okay.
There was all kind of crazy shit up there on Sunday.
Yeah. What I think is, you know, the car shows have all stopped. The parking lot for once is pretty empty, and you know, people congregate and come and have a cup of coffee. All I'm saying is just maybe not huddle together all 20 of you together and hug each other. Just yet.
Yeah, because all the retail's still closed. It's sort of got people actually kind of
great lot.
Can spread it's out a, in the lot. Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't want to be Mustang guy leaving. That's it. Just think about Mustang guy crashing into a tree in front of everyone. Don't be that guy.
Yeah. Please be kind and don't ruin this one for us. We really like it.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
My he's not my brother-in-law. He's like he's the brother. He's the husband of my brother-in-law's wife. Doesn't matter. But he owns a place called Bluey's in Santa Monica. It's sort of an Australian-themed coffee shop and small restaurant. But it's like over by the airport, you know, and they've got a their own lot of like 50 cars. And so I was thinking about maybe trying to have some sort of highly selected, socially distant car gathering there. It's like sort of on like an industrial block where like it's probably like a lot of like creative offices that eat there during the week, but it's like dead on a Sunday. So it could be kind of cool. Might be fucking around with that.
I've been to Blowies, but not Blueys.
what's Blowies?
The kids are watching.
Oh God!
Look. Why do you really miss car shows that much? I mean, being outside with a bunch of guys and their hands in their pockets, just leaning against cars. Or, I mean, the driving right now is incredible.
It is.
Right? The roads are open. People are driving a little slowly, which I don't understand. Like the coronavirus is chasing them somehow, or they go too fast. It's going to hit them in the eye. I don't understand that piece. But the open roads and getting to go wherever you want, like from my house to Angeles Crest, and everything's fast and accessible all of a sudden. That's the part I'm really loving. If only there weren't so much death, I'd say this is an ideal situation.
I know. Selfishly, I'm enjoying that I can get to the Angeles Forest in 25 minutes from my house.
Right?
I'm not pleased with at what cost I get to do that. But
no.
But selfishly.
Don't you hear? I have a question for you, Matt. Maybe we covered it on my show. What have you noticed a difference in what you like to drive versus what you usually drive in normal times?
Oh, ooh. Well, I mean,
aside from press cars, I'm saying, what cars are you really enjoying getting into?
The really obvious difference is that I'm using my scooter a lot less. Uh-huh. And I love my scooter. I love my Vespa. But I think fundamentally, the fact that there's like not really traffic, like I'm really only using that as a traffic beating tool, and I think I've realized that I prefer to be in a car most times if the traffic isn't an issue. So I've been in cars more than I've been on my bike. I've only been on my bike maybe like once every 2 weeks for the last 8 weeks. But I've been driving the 911 more. The 911's super fun in the city without the traffic. That's a great time. You?
Are these lines annoying you? This is my shades.
I was wondering why you have this vertical lines.
I thought you had a bowling shirt on.
I thought it was. Oh, now it looks like you're wearing a Nat Nast bowling shirt.
The
like
sun
Charlie
is
Sheen.
Right in my face. I don't know what. To, hey,
oh, that's
that?
That's better. Yeah, it's fine.
Oh,
don't worry about
it's
it.
Really not. No. How about that?
Right there.
That's the best I can do right now. That's the best I can do.
That's okay.
You can see over there, I have a tub of bubble gum right there.
Great. Don't chew it on the show.
And over,
no.
I can't make my hands work right. Over there, excellence was expected. The Porsche story, decade by decade right there. I'm enjoying the old cars. Every time I get into a new car, I want to get into an old car. I told you I really loved the Morgan. The Morgan Plus 4, the press car.
Yeah, the new old car.
Felt, what a great press car to drive during this thing.
Totally.
You know, open cockpit, crazy. Look at those little sloopy doors there. Made of balsa wood. If you get hit by a bike, you're dead. You're T-boned by
if you drive by a termite,
bigger
you're
than a
dead.
Skateboard, you're dead.
Yeah.
But super fun, beloved by the people of Los Angeles. You know, who's not liking that car? It's so Dick Van Dyke-y in its execution and so odd and so fun. So that car I miss, I really enjoyed. I don't know that I'd enjoy it as much without the quarantine. I'm driving the Zagato right now, which definitely does the trick. And I'm preferring, like, the this 82 Targa I have, I'm preferring, like, open-air cars.
Yeah, to the air's been really clean, huh?
Right.
The air, yeah. The clean air has been, like, I've been windows down, a lot of windows down, a lot of sunroof. It's been good.
And it feels good for a little while, right? You kind of,
for sure.
You're not as freaked out.
Yeah, this Zagato, right, it's the sexiest. This thing... So, Spike, talk about what this Zagato is. I think we've discussed it before last time you were on the show that it was in the works, right. But now you actually have the thing.
Yeah. Well, long and the short of it is they were going to build a car in 1959, and they got together with Porsche. Zagato got together with Porsche and said, let's build it now. And there's the car. It's the donor car is a 61 356 donor car. They essentially take the steel off the top and throw it into a dumpster and put that beautiful aluminum body on it. And the engine, the donor car was a Super 90. It was built up to not 90 horsepower, but a little more, 125 by John Wilhoit recently. And you know, the car was delivered a year ago. We've been working on it for an additional year to kind of get it into the shape we wanted it to be in. And it is now perfection.
It is the most Italian thing ever to take something German and give it to you incomplete.
It was incomplete. It just, you know, like any project, Zuckerman and I looked at the project and said, this is good. We can make it really great now. It's beautiful to look at, but mechanically, it's not where we want it to be. And we thought if we kind of put the time and money and the energy into this, that, you know, later on, maybe years down the line, someone will recognize that. It's worth it. And it is. Like, you get in this car now, it is so light. I compared it to driving a potato chip. So it's 125 horsepower. You feel like you're in a Diet Coke can. That's how thin and light everything feels. Oops. And it just hums. It sets off car alarms. It is an incredible car that wheel drive next to, you know, Jerry's 4Cams, any, you know, the 550s, you know, maybe his Abarth Carrera GTL, and, you know, at 1/6 the price of one of those cars. It's really an incredible thing, yet it has the reliability of an early 60s 356, but the sound is very similar. It's really a great thing.
I have never rebuilt a 356 engine or had one rebuilt. Is the price to horsepower ratio as bad with a 356 as it is with a 911, where you go, how did this little four-cylinder engine become this expensive?
This is generally the 356 engine is a cheaper rebuild. Okay. Now, John Wilhoit doesn't know the word cheaper.
Right.
but he is the guy. He's considered in our group, and I think in Porsche circles, as the maestro. He's one of those guys who delivers a car and you get it and everything's right. And there are only a couple of these guys right now who know how to do that. Like, where you get in and so many cars. Have you ever gotten one, a car that comes back from the mechanic and the horn doesn't work?
Yeah.
The light. And this does not happen with this guy. He puts these cars together. He makes them right. He keeps them until they're working up to his standards, and then he delivers them. And he knocked this one out of the park. He crushed it.
Well, the good news is Spike's been saying for fucking 2.5 months, there's no way you're going to fit in the car. Zuckerman can't really fit in the car.
Yeah, I didn't think
you're
so.
Not going to fit in the car. And I pretty much was like, okay, it looks tiny. Yeah, I'm not going to fit in the car. But then I go over to the garage, and guess what? Your boy fits in the car. And not only
how tall are you, Matt?
I'm 6'3". I fit in the car.
So
I took my shoes off, though, so I get an extra inch and a half, you know, on the bottom of my feet without shoes. But like, yeah, no, I fit in the car. And not only that, it was reasonably comfortable. I could go for an hour or two in that thing and it would be all right. And yeah,
the Zagato seats are very shifter. Flat. I'm sure you felt that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was not the most supportive seat out there.
That's just the way they are.
I just fit.
But yeah, we'll definitely let you drive it.
I just want to have a quick little go, just to see what it's like, because it seems fire. There it is for size next to the Morgan. There it is right there.
Let me put it this way. I drove with my neighbor, and he had his GT2 RS, and I kept up with him just fine.
So you want to talk about old cars mobbing? Zach and I were up in the canyons the other day filming that M8, which is 4,400-pound, all-wheel drive, 620-horsepower, you know, super GT. We've got the video, and we came upon this dude in a 308, mobbing on a level I have not seen someone mobbing an old 308. It was extremely impressive. And we thought he might sail the thing off a cliff at a couple different periods, but, man, did he wheel that thing.
Did you say he was doing donuts?
He was also doing donuts.
We came over this crest, and I see tire smoke, and I'm like, whoa. I'm like, oh, Ferrari's doing donuts. And then the orange McLaren takes off down the road. He takes off after it. We follow behind him, and then he was chasing McLaren, and we were chasing him. But he had just been doing donuts in a 308 and then just ripped it up the hill.
He was trying to keep up with
you
his
were
McLaren.
On it, right?
Yeah.
Zach was flying.
I was driving quick. I was not like, I didn't know the car. I'd been in the car for like 8 minutes and I didn't know the road as well. But this dude, we were not going slow.
No, Zach was going fast. Zach was going fast.
He was.
Yeah, we had the you know that when you have a big heavy car and you're really pushing some really wide tires, or we had that going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this guy was really, really caning that.
So do you think that was a stock engine then?
Yeah, it's just a guy that I don't think was really aware of how close he probably was. No, I'm just kidding. I hit him up on Instagram. He was very cool and very modest. He said, you know, I just like to go fast in my old car. So good.
Those
for him.
Cars aren't that fast. That's what I'm saying. Next to what you guys are driving.
It was his cornering speed. It wasn't even his. It was not the power. It
I don't think he
speed.
Ever lifted. he started at home, floored it, never lifted, and then just kept going. I mean, his brake.
Very cool way.
His brakes. He was on brakes for half a second here and there.
I'm watching the market on 308s and 328s. If they dip down to where they were, you know, that rock bottom number when they're like in the 40s for a good driver, it's sort of like, ooh, now's the time to get in.
89
is a good year for a 328. Yeah.
And belt service. Make sure it's done.
Yes, of course.
But you know, I've said this before to you. I know guys, or I've met people with Ferrari collections, and they have all these big dog Ferraris, and that's the car they drive.
Yeah.
28.
They seem
it's
fun.
It's always an 89.
Donnie's all about that. That's what Donnie's going to find me one eventually.
Everything's going to be cheap soon, Matt. Don't worry about it.
I know.
It.
You know, out of curiosity, yesterday I was looking on Boat Trader. Just to see if we'd hit the bottom of the boat market yet. Because I've seen so many people out on boats, and I'm like, well, what a great activity. I wonder if anyone.
I did this too.
Did
you?
What,
hilarious.
Did you find anything good?
My wife caught me. She went, no.
I found that there's really a sweet spot in the $40,000 to $60,000 range for sailboats. Wow. You can get something nice in the mid 30s that you could pretty much do whole weeks on. It was pretty. Yeah, but
so
I
you
feel,
would go for a sailboat?
Yeah, man. I'm a wind guy. I'm a wind guy. Gotta say, how's the Ferrari market looking, Zach? Not low enough.
89 328 GTS 109,000. This is on Hemmings.
Nope.
Who's that?
That's a nope. 87,
86, 88.
Yeah. 89s are always not a little more, but they should be in the five figures for sure.
Ooh, 200 for that one. There's very
200.
Very few for sale.
Yeah.
Wow.
This only has 700 miles on it.
Oh.
But
yeah.
You can, Matt, you look at these numbers and the simple math you have to do, you just divide by 2 and then you have what it's worth, then divide by 2 again, and that's what the guy's going to take right now. It's, you know, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, because I talked to, you know, Steve Cirio, who works at Aston Martin New England.
Yes, and he was on our show.
Great. Yeah, he said, you know, I spoke with him yesterday. He said, a lot of these guys are home. They got nothing to do. They're sitting on big bank accounts, and they're buying cars because driving is one of the few things you can do. So it's possible that things are just going to be fine. However, it's also possible that if the car market were like kind of a twin prop plane up in the air, 30,000 feet up, and then they ran out of gas, they would still glide for a little while. But then it goes,
yeah.
And crashes and burns.
We had Randy Nonnenberg from Bring a Trailer on the show last week, and he pretty much said, I mean, he's a very modest and chill guy, but he did everything short of brag about how much money they were making right now.
Wow, that's great.
He basically said that they were just cranking them out. He's like, people are buying people. He's like, wow. You'd be shocked how many people have enough money to just sit at home and play fucking auction buying cars. He said things are moving.
Yeah, but it's not even that. It's like, you know, we used to have to wait for Monterey Car Week or January in Scottsdale. And now, I mean, the genius of Bring a Trailer. I have no official affiliation.
Oh, I didn't even notice that you got the hat on. Yeah, good for you.
As you have some money, or suddenly your dad dies and leaves you some money, on a Thursday, you can buy a car. You don't have to wait. That's the genius of that site. And then when they upped the stock to be cars that we all, you know, the collectors really like too. Now you've got stuff at every price point. I mean, how do you compete with that if you're Gooding or you're RM Sotheby's? How do you compete with this?
It's very tough. Very tough. I see they got a GTC4 up on their premium site. You had one of those.
Yeah.
I'll
bet you it's down from what I paid. Probably about $100K.
I don't know. What's it at? What's that red one at, Zach?
It's at 150, and it's got 17 hours left.
Yeah, that's down for one of those. That's probably might be a good buy at that price, huh, Spike?
It won't go for that.
They're
up around 250, 275 right now. I don't know anything about this car. I'm kind of looking at it as you're scrolling up. Wow, that's nice.
Yeah,
real clean.
Yeah, red over cream. Nice. What else do you have?
7,000 miles. The most is 72.
Yes.
The most expensive car that you could buy in 1972, production car was that car.
Was it? What was the MSRP?
Yeah. About $27,500, I think.
That's a lot.
Yeah, Prius price.
Yeah. No, that's a shitload for 1972.
Yeah. No, yeah. I know. They're cool. They're really cool cars. If you have like two kids to throw in the back, it's a family grand tour. I like it.
How often... It's got six twin carbs. So how long would they stay like tuned, and then how often would you have to get that little tweak?
Okay. My experience with Ferraris is the following. You buy it and immediately you write a check for $35,000 to a guy named like Donnie Calloway to do that work. No matter what the seller tells you, you're going to be sending that Ferrari in for $35,000 worth of engine work. However, once you do that additional work after buying the perfect car,
oh my God,
they tend to last for a while. They tend to do okay. And that's only happened to me on two cars, but I think I've only owned two Ferraris.
You can't.
It's a number I hear a lot from guys who buy vintage Ferraris.
It's very funny.
That after you buy it, the perfect car, it's another $35,000. And then it works great for 3 to 5 years, just general maintenance.
That's cool. I think that means let's just apply that to my red car. Let's assume it's similar, except I made the seller pay that, do that crazy thing before I got it. So that means I should have 2 to 4 years left of just good party time with that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. My experience with my Dino, which I owned for 12 years, was once I did the engine, it worked great for all 12 years. Mm-hmm. I just did oil changes and basic maintenance on it.
So basically, you can't trust. Right. You can't trust what anyone has ever done or told you about before. So I took Donnie Calloway with me to look at a car. And I won't say whose car it was, but I will say that it was a 355 I was interested in buying. And Donnie, the car from 3 feet away, 4 feet away, this car looked magnificent. I mean, this was a perfect car by all accounts. It had low miles, the right color, 6-speed, Berlinetta, you know, everything. Current tires, service records for 15 years, the whole deal, right? Within about 3.5 minutes, Donnie finds almost $20,000 worth of shit this car needs.
That's it.
And so I take that into account, and I make what I think is a reasonable offer considering what Donnie has pointed out. My offer was declined, respectfully, and the car sold for the asking price like a week later to somebody else.
Yes,
and that's how it goes.
We have Bring a Trailer. We need Bring a Mechanic. to bring a trailer.
Oh,
that's
shit.
What we need next. Somebody to vet these cars. Because it's one of those weird internet things. Like when eBay Motors first came out, we all knew, like, just be really careful. You're not driving this car. You're not seeing it in person. You're most likely going to get screwed. And I remember thinking, okay, at least we all agree that we're not going to buy cars from eBay Motors. But now it's even worse than it's ever been. More people pull the trigger on more stuff that they haven't driven or they haven't seen.
That's what Frank Meekin was saying is really funny. When people buy the old trucks, like they'll buy Broncos and stuff because they're just, yes. they love them, and they'll drive it like away from the auction and then come back and like, this drives like Same shit. Like, hey man, you didn't know that?
That's my Land Rover Series 2A. That's how I got that car. Rich guy down in Laguna Beach, Newport Beach. His wife goes, I want that old blue Land Rover. There it is. She goes, I'm going to buy it for you, honey, and sells it for $18,000. Barrett jacks it. She gets in it. She goes, sell this piece of shit.
Oh, my God.
He deals it to somebody in Sherman Oaks. They're like, oh, my God, this piece of shit. And I go, that's exactly what I want. And I paid $6,000 for
no
it.
No way.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Are you serious?
That's a great buy.
Yeah. That's and then I put the money wow. into making it right, making it safe. And there it is. And I love it because I know how it drives. It drives like a tractor.
Wow.
I like that.
What did you have to do to it after you got it?
A lot, an awful lot. The interior parts are really easy to kind of buy and kind of just plug in from British catalogs. We had to work on the suspension. We had to, the engine worked. It's got 95,000 original miles on it. It was a lot of tweaking, like those wheel hubs there, the locking wheel hubs we installed. All major components, as I recall, were fine. It was really the chassis. It was putting in new chassis pieces and new suspension pieces that had rusted out.
Wow.
Seat belts. I installed the new steering wheel. I did a lot of the little interior work myself, which was easy. You know, making the heat work. It's really been fun. And then the last thing we did to it not long ago is we took all the tires off it and put those little thin off-road tires on it, which are correct for the car, but also just make it easier to steer. And that yeah. little tire up on top is an even smaller tire that allows you to kind of look forward. If you put the regular tire on it, you're just looking at a tire as you're driving it, which is quite dangerous. So this this fella in Venice, this old guy who used to work on the car who just retired, he said this is the little trick that he's learned about these old Land Rovers. Get a really thin tire for the hood, and it looks right. You can use it as a spare, but you'll also be able to see.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Do you fun. Have any? Is I there any downside to driving on them skinny little tires in the street? I suppose not, right? The thing's slow not anyway.
No, the only thing I'm wrestling with, and I wrestle every year, there are two things. One is converting it to a canvas top so, you know, you can have that kind of summery Land Rover experience. Without that, though, you don't really have a roll bar. So you've got the whole family in something. Even though it's got a low center of gravity, it's really heavy. If it does roll, we're all mashed.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'm not quite sure I'm going to do. And the other thing is taking it to Gorman. Like, is it going to make it on
on the freeway?
Right? I've done some decently long, like maybe 30-minute runs on the highway with it, and I can get it up to 63 miles an hour with my downhill.
No,
but if it, you know, if it goes, Then I'm just stuck. I don't. So if I could find an off-road place very close to LA here,
we could probably really find you some right basic. There's a couple like just basic little trails that are closer to LA. Like if we go, certainly after the coronavirus is over, like where the Rauher Flats area, which is right off the 14, is a lot closer. Like just off the when you get off the
How
14.
How far away?
I don't know, 40 miles maybe.
Oh, that's not bad.
Or we just rent,
when is the coronavirus over?
I don't know. Or we just rent an open trailer and we tow it behind your other Range Rover.
Because
it's probably light enough. So we'll just get an open trailer and then tow it to wherever we need to tow it. And then it's fine.
You know what? It runs just fine. It's just in that with these British contraptions that I own, like the 66 Triumph Bonneville and this thing, that there's 2 to 3 years of sorting where you break down a lot. Where everything just kind of shits out the bottom of it. And what that does
so
psychologically
Ferrari,
to you is you go, every time you're driving and you're kind of waiting for it to stop. And I've had 3 good years in it of no breakdowns, you know, and it's at the point where I really kind of have to get over the bad psychology of this thing and really test its reliability, because I think it might actually be there.
I think it is, but I think if your top speed is 63, your cruise is like 55. That's just a shit drive up the freeway. Let's just rent a trailer and tow it behind your Range Rover.
I like it, though. It's so relaxing that you're out of the game, that you can't compete at all with anybody on the road.
I know exactly how you feel. The Delica is like that, where the Delica, it's like, it's 86 horsepower, so you're going to go this speed, and if people pass you, okay. But even that'll do 70. Like, that one will do 70.
That's super fast.
Yeah, I would do Land Rover versus Delica off-road challenge.
Yes!
That would be fun, wouldn't it, Spike?
Yes! Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah. I will bring my wife's minivan to an off-road challenge with you.
I would feel so much better if you were with me in a car just near me on the highway.
I
don't want to break down next to one of those big walls where you're going like this, trying to get out of the way while someone's texting on their phone. That's the only piece I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, I'll spot you with my slow vehicle.
Yeah,
we'll have a slow vehicle. But you know what this means? It means we need to force Zuckerman to buy something.
He's got a Myers Manx.
Oh, yes.
And he has not driven.
That's perfect. That couldn't be more perfect. That's amazing.
There's nothing better.
That's amazing. Post Delica, three. Land Rover, Myers Manx. Yo, we can sell that shit to Haggerty Magazine in 2 seconds, dude.
Let's do it.
That's great. Someone needs to financially back Zach on getting like a Lada Niva 4x4. Or like, you know what I'm kind of feeling, Spike? You know those Volkswagen Golf Countries? Have you seen those?
I'm gonna look at it. Right,
like,
now.
Wait, what year?
It's a Volkswagen Golf that's got the Synchro in it. It's a lift. It's like a factory safari Golf.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. These are the
jam, right? Like,
that's
tell me,
Zach.
that's fucking awesome, isn't it? How do you not love that? Zach, we should build you one of these, and then I'll take my 911, you have your little safari here, and we'll fucking do it.
Dude, I'm so into this. And I think I would win the highway contest, but I think the ultimate hill challenge, I think, would be between you and Spike.
I've got low range in the Delica.
That Land Rover has to have low range. No, Spike?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And a suspension that goes in 80 different directions at once. It's an amazing thing.
But I think
similar is the Series 2 Land Rover suspension to the Morgan Plus 4 suspension?
They are. They're lots. Well, you know, it has the inner door handles. They are the same inner door handles, which I found very strange that the new Morgan has the inner door handle from a 1971 and earlier 60 series Land Rover.
Yeah. Like,
there was nothing better, nothing newer in that one.
It just works.
It's such a funny choice. And also, it's just on the inside. It's not on the outside. So that was odd, but
it
I liked it.
Hilarious.
I don't want to badmouth the Morgan. I really loved it. It's really a fun, likable machine.
You're not badmouthing the Morgan. You are being totally honest and transparent about what that car is. That car is so bad that it has circled back around to good. It's gone all the way around to the other side.
Did I tell you that for years I've been seeing my neighbor go down every day in his Morgan, and I don't know the guy, but he heard mine and came down to my house for the first time since I've lived here and said, "Are you driving a Morgan?" This lonely, lonely Morgan owner, and we bonded over Morgans. Oh, it was great.
It's like
everybody
getting a new puppy.
It
helps
Morgan
you make friends.
Everybody else who has a Morgan, what, many of them.
What year was his car? Like that, I guess that speaks to how this one. Okay, so he recognized the sound, even though this one's a 2019, like, because it sounds old. It does sound old.
You know, he could probably smell it, because just nobody else is driving Morgans in LA.
Is that ash I smell? Fresh cut ash?
I like this car. I really like the car.
Oh, it's so charming.
I miss it.
Well,
and you
maybe
looked good in it, Matt. You had your wife with you, and you had your cap on.
Wait, not as good as Zach. Did you see how Zach looked in it? Zach and his girl did like some proper, like, period correct dress.
Went motoring. I took a
for
a ride.
Even more so than you and I. They did like proper costumes and everything. I mean, it helps. Well, it helps that his lady is quite attractive. That really rounds out the entire thing.
That offsets me.
Oh, Zach was Zach basically is a thin me in this picture. I have the same outfit.
We have this, yeah. Everyone's like, "Oh, you put on a costume." I was like, "I put on a hat." I wear this shirt often. But
but Sarah looks quite nice.
Sarah looks good, and
the flapper thing.
She had like the full outfit going on. It looked really good.
Yeah, once you do the scarf around the hair, you know, that really does it.
Yeah. That's what the car makes you want to do. It makes you want to go have fun, joke around, speak in weird voices. It's just like, it's a silly thing, and everyone likes it.
Yeah,
everybody
likes
it.
Your Mid-Atlantic
everybody
accents.
Likes it.
Everybody likes
but
it.
I think it's old. I think you got to be old and grizzled. See, I was talking to the guys, and I was saying, because we have this theory that when you see an old man with a captain's hat, that guy is going to die in the next couple of weeks. He's kind of preparing to sail on into the yacht. Because you only see really old guys with captain hats, like Captain and Tennille. Now, I think before that, there's this earlier stage where you buy a Morgan. Then you get the captain's hat. And then you die. I think it's strictly an old guy thing.
In between that period, does your beard get to about 18 inches long?
Yeah. You stop giving a fuck about anything. You drink a lot. You eat a lot. Captain's hat. Goodbye.
If I make it to 75, heroin. Just we're gonna do it. Seems fun.
What are we talking about?
I'm just saying, if you get there,
all evidence points to people enjoy it.
Yeah,
I think I'd say
there's a lot of downsides.
Do you think when you get a prescription for like Xantac 75, they give you the Morgan? Is that the age range? Like, here you go, sir. You're gonna need these two things.
No, I think it's a craving. Don't I could, you know, it's if you 10 years ago, I would have not even taken the press car. I would have said, no, I don't want to be seen in that thing. Now I'm like,
I don't know. I think
pretty attractive.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. And I kind of know Dick Van Dyke, and it all kind of works. And I don't know if this is the New England in me or what, but it was an immediate yes. When I saw you in it, Matt, I said, I want to be Matt Farah in a Morgan right now.
I was so happy as me in that car. I'm really looking forward so much to the new generation of that car. And I've spoken to the Morgan folks a bunch. They thought my video was hilarious. They love that, like, all of us are just talking about this thing, of course. So
the new car is what? Aluminum chassis?
The new car is going to look just like the old car, basically, but aluminum chassis, bonded aluminum, and double wishbone suspension, front and rear. So that will be a complete game changer, because it'll have the same attitude that you want it to have, but it should actually ride and handle somewhat properly.
Will it have the same engine?
No, the new engines are the BMW engines.
So fast.
Turbos.
Too fast.
Like, that's going to be way too fast.
Can I do this anymore? Are they going to take away the manual?
Both. Manual or auto. Both. With either. And there's the Morgan, the Plus 6 is coming out, which has the fucking Supra engine in it. Imagine 385 horsepower in that thing. That's double what they gave us in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Pull up the Plus 6. Oh, here's the new Plus 4. The new Plus 4 looks pretty much the same, but you can spot differences. The lower front valance, the wheels are a little different. There's a few little keys from the Aero series car. And then the Plus 6, they just go fucking off the rails and it starts to look almost like a Wiesmann, if you remember those cars.
Oh, it does.
Remember
oh,
the Wiesmann? Yeah. There's some Wiesmann details in this one, which I like very much. And this is
he still making cars, that guy?
No, they're not anymore. Those things were pretty.
Still has the wood, but now it's got a BMW twin turbo.
Wait, is that the wood right there?
Yeah,
there's the wood.
Oh, jeez.
yeah, the wood is there. But look, the new seats look great in there.
Seats look good.
The steering wheel is shared with a Lotus Evora. It's the Lotus Evora steering wheel, and I can see a BMW.
We like the new horn, the new centerpiece for the steering wheel. We didn't like that piece of steel that was in the Plus 4 in the press car.
That was an optional steering wheel.
Yeah, it didn't look right.
I agree with you. That's a great looking silhouette right there. They raked it a little bit,
made it a little
aggro, and they cut some gills in the side pontoon. I like everything about that. They even made the doors like even lower. The door cutouts
are
even lower.
That's what you needed. You needed no steering wheel and lower doors. Man, yes. It'll be great for going straight and just laughing and being afraid. But but I think it'll lose some of the kind of the putt-putt charm that the other engine had. But that's why you can choose whichever one you want.
We need Jen Horsey to convince them to do a factory formula drift entry.
Yes.
Right? Imagine there some Englishman shows up in a fucking tartan, like a tartan fire suit, yeah. Just fucking full angle on a Morgan. It's like tuned to 800 horsepower.
Try not to crash it. This is the press car. We've got to give it back after the end of the season.
Bin it.
Right, yeah. Like they don't have that. Isn't the West Coast office here? It's like it's like a house with
it's
some
a
cars
shed.
Up
it's
front.
Properly a shed. Yeah.
That's the dealership. That's yeah. We don't have a West Coast office.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Morgan West.
But it's a very charming. That's a regional dealership. It's not even just L.A. That's like the whole West Coast in that shit.
Yeah, it's good. I like
They're
it
good.
There.
What's it's on good. The what's on the horizon for you, Spike?
Well, I have to take a moment to thank a fan of mine and yours who I forgot to thank on my podcast this morning. So I'm going to thank him here. From the Boston University class of 2020, can you imagine graduating Matt Farah right now? Graduating high school or graduating college, everything is worked up to this, and you don't get that big graduation ceremony. Well,
no,
Jake Pressman,
Obama virtually.
Jake Pressman, your mom sent me a message on Instagram. She didn't send me any dirty pictures, though. I would have given you a big shout out had she done that. And I'm here to wish you a congratulations for graduating Boston University. I used to live near Boston University. It's a cool school. He's a car fan. He likes you too, Matt Farah. He just got, I think his mom said they bought him a Tesla for graduating.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
Well, I have some good news because Jake Pressman's mom also contacted us, and she did send nudes. Zach, pull it up. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's see them. Double thank you. No, she was very nice. And what a mom.
Holy shit, a Tesla as a graduation present. What was, Spike, when you were in high school, were there rich kids that drove rich kid cars?
No, but there were kids like my friend Scotty Warmington, whose dad was a cop. They built a Chevy Nova hot rod. Like, that was the cool car in my hometown.
Okay.
Like, it was jacked like this. Talk about a rake. And, it, you know, with the engine scoop coming out the front.
Right.
We thought that was the greatest thing we had ever seen. And we were all driving, you know, $400 Ford Gran Torinos, Torino 500s, Mercury Montegos, crap like that. You know, Datsun B210s was a big deal. My friend Jimmy Connolly had one of those.
Thinking about a high school parking lot full of Teslas is like really kind of blows my mind.
Do you think they mix them up and they accidentally like, oh, sorry, that's yours. That's which one's charging? Like, because they look the same.
Oh my God. Do
which
you think
panel
they have
gap?
To put chargers at school for students and shit now? I just.
They shouldn't. They don't have gas
Do
stations.
Do they, Spike? Do they put chargers at high schools and stuff now?
I was in traffic at where Brentwood School is, the high school, once, and it was the kids coming into school. But I was looking, going, God, what are they having a car show here?
Yeah.
It was high school kids going to school.
Yeah.
It was custom made Range Rovers from the 80s and new Porsches. And I look, and every one of them had a kid behind the wheel.
Yeah.
It was a little outrageous.
We're at Westside. We're right around the corner from Loyola Marymount University.
Yeah.
And I've gotten a few calls from internationals who are bugging out for 6 months to a year looking for long-term storage for their G-Wagon or their Lamborghini Urus or whatever.
Wow.
I've had a few of those. And then we also...
Why would you work?
Huh?
Why would you work if your parents are buying you those things?
No,
me through my whole career was like, if I work really hard, I might be able to get a new car.
Yeah.
And then if I work really hard, I might be able to get a new cool car.
Yeah.
But
I don't know.
If I got that in high school, I'd be dead from heroin.
I was I was invited to their car show, and I went a couple years ago, and the LMU car show was pretty impressive.
Good.
I mean, honestly, you know, there was a lot of high end German and medium grade Italian stuff, and it was really what's great about it is Like you could also see this play out in Justin Bieber's life. It doesn't really matter how much money someone has. How they modify their car is determined by their age and only their age. And so, you know, you see a kid with a Bentley and he's done the kind of shit to it that a kid with a Civic would have done, you know, the same sort of thing. There's like fake extraneous badging, you know, and sort of like ill-fitting stereo equipment and stuff like that. But it's a Bentley. It's really strange.
Wow.
Yeah. Worth that seeing, though. Strange. I do recommend visiting that show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. We got a lot of questions from folks. Let's tell you, Spike, you want to go to the people?
Let me keep talking. Let me scroll through and look for Spike-specific questions besides Zach, your own bio, so we'll do that.
Zach needs to filter through the good shits. Thank you for introducing me to my new friend Tom Segura, Spike.
You're welcome.
That guy rules, and he knows his cars.
He's so funny.
He is driving a McLaren GT press car this week.
And he is.
He is. I set him up, and he is not. And he is has never been to the Angeles Forest before.
What?
He didn't know about it. He doesn't. It turns out that there's people in the city who like cars and don't know about the Angeles Forest. So we're going to give him a tour.
That's great.
Should be good fun. If you'd like to join, bring an old car.
Yeah, I'm in. Let me know.
It'll be cool. And I also just got the shout out from the Gunther Works guys. I get to drive the production car. I drove the red car, which was sort of their mule. Mm-hmm. And now they've got this green car, which is the production one. And apparently it's just fucking bananas. I mean, it's supposedly just insane how like just light and raw and responsive it is. Did you ever drive the red one, Spike?
I was supposed to, and then I lost contact with the gentleman.
Okay.
That frequently happens. I'm sure it's my fault. I'd love to drive it.
You would really appreciate it. Dynamically, it's extraordinary. Because you can see, is this picture pulled up, Zach, the picture you've got on the screen here? It's really it's got a hot rod Roth Sport motor in it, you know, and it's a full carbon body and et cetera, but it's really all about that widened front end. Because it's not that they've put some crazy wide RWB front tire in there. They completely re-engineer the front suspension to move the whole thing out. And so it has just ridiculous levels of front grip. It's like the kind of front grip like you'd expect from like a 991, you know, turbo. You know what I mean? In a 993 chassis car. That geometry change is wild.
What kind of engine? What's going on in the engine?
It is and I don't want to fuck this up. I believe it's a four. It's Roth Sport. It's a Roth Sport motor. Oh yeah, Zach, pull up the tab so we can see. It's a Roth Sport motor. I think it's a 4 liter. It might be a 4.1. It's 435 horsepower, air cooled. It's probably a $250,000 engine. It's a crazy engine.
What am I trying to look at? Their engine?
That exactly. We've got 4.0, 400 horsepower.
I
think it weighs 26.
Go down.
Zach, what do we see? A curb weight? I just booked this today, guys. I'm sorry for not looking through it ahead. I'll get the curb weight later if we can't find it immediately.
Carbon.
It's like 26, I think. It's light as fuck. It's crazy.
It doesn't have weight, but it's got to be light.
I love the blue.
Yeah, the bare carbon with that blue highlight really works. I brought that car to Luftgild, and it was fucking good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
What a beautiful thing.
I'll take bare carbon, please, with that blue.
Yep.
Look at that rear view.
That's very, very nice. This thing sounds the fucking business, too. So I'm driving that. Very exciting. And we traded the M8 in for this X3M, which is an X3 with an M3 engine in it, which is interesting. So far, I've only had it for one day. So far, early thoughts, suspension is really, really stiff. It's the Focus RS of crossovers, but holy shit, does it have a hot rod motor in it. That M3 motor, I forgot how much power that makes. That's a powerful engine.
Would you want to run that on one lap? Because you did the X5M.
No, I'd beat the shit out of me. I'd run a Macan Turbo on one lap. That's my move.
Little smaller than the X5, although...
No, X3M we have, not X5.
No, I know, but yeah. I mean, you ran the X5M.
Oh, yeah.
So the Macondo was a little bit smaller, even though everything's kind of grown a little bit. So it'd be a little more maneuverable, you think?
So what you want for one lap is a car that has a square stance so you can rotate your tires. And the X5M has directional and staggered, so we couldn't rotate our tires, and that's what cost us a first place trophy in one lap. For SUV class. Let's go to the people. What do we have?
All right. We have a question for Spike and then a bunch of Porsche stuff and some other stuff. Okay. Spike, first question. Have you done any project cars? And if not, do you have any dreams or plans to modify something like...
Well, I would guess the Zagato is a project car.
Yeah.
That is not something that was a car that Porsche built, and there were a lot of decisions that went into that.
But it wasn't really intended to be a project car, was it? Didn't you just sort of think that you were buying a thing that was going to be delivered complete?
No, we always knew the chassis and the engine, the drivetrain, and the body were all going to be new, and you know, we were. Again, it was hard because the car was built in Milan. We were trying to have this thing made without being there and visiting the mechanics who were actually putting it together. I did go to Zagato, to Milan with my wife, and we saw the presentation, and we saw their workshop, and we saw their collection. It was great. But after that, I wasn't able to interface with the guys who were building the cars. So that, you know, it's become, when a car was delivered, now we're managing the mechanical side. We managed the exterior in Italy, and now with John Wilhoit, the mechanical side. And, you know, just got it delivered a couple weeks ago. The car is amazing. So that I consider our first big project car. I've always wanted to do something with Rod Emery. I'm a big fan of Rod, and I'd love to build another kind of 356 open cockpit racer. That would be pretty damn cool. And then maybe something like this, you know, that Gunther car looks great.
Yeah, that's basically a turnkey car, and they are expensive, but they are, that seems like the thing that you would be into.
I would probably do something like an 74 IROC replica car, you know, built to my specs that felt like a mid 70s RSR.
Yeah.
I'd be into that. Wouldn't care if it was real or not, if I could make it as accurate as possible.
Mm-hmm.
All that's right. Cool.
Ray Lee asks, "Our 997 GT2, sorry, our 997.2 GTS is so much better than a well-optioned 997.2 C2S that it's worth dealing with center-locked wheels since most of the GTS come with them."
He's asking me.
He's asking both y'all.
You first, Spike. GTS.
What are my choices? A 997 GT2.
No, GTS over Carrera S. Is it worth it because the gentleman sees the center lock wheels that come with most of the available examples as a downside because they're annoying on a regular road car?
I, you know, snap judgment, no. I'm not a fan of the GTS. I tracked it once. I couldn't get it to move around. It felt like neither 911 nor GT car. And, you know, it seems like, for me, that car's always been a cop-out for guys that don't want to buy a GT3. So I would stick with a regular Carrera.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you. I think the GTS is nice, but I think the delta right now between a GTS and a GT3 is not that big, and you could probably get the rest of the way if you really want it.
Right.
It's worth
it. But they always get... It's the wing that puts everybody off.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
GT3, yeah. Which is the best part.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
I'm pro
and
wing.
It functions. Yes.
All right. Jim Gentil asks, has anyone tracked down the last production 993? He's saying not Project Gold. He can't find any information where the last one went.
This guy asked me this question too.
Ah.
That's not the Project Gold car that came after, right?
It was was built from parts later.
Wait, Jerry has the last 993, right?
I don't know. Do you?
That would make sense.
Does he?
He's got one of the first 911s, if not the first 911.
Oh, wait, you know what?
He has the last 911.
He does have the last
blue
one.
Car.
The blue one. Yeah, you're right. That is
not
the last 993.
Not only that, I've driven it. It's a C4S.
Yes, you are right, Spike. Jerry does own the last 993. I all of a sudden remembered that, too. It is cars, very funny that you didn't remember that until right now. Well,
he has a lot of cars.
I know.
It gets blurry. But that car is beautiful. That's it's Mexico blue. It's a C4S, and it's, you know, I think it's probably got a couple hundred miles on it right now. So when you drive it, it's like a brand new car. It's an incredible car.
Wow. Zach Trump just got done watching The Last Dance. She said it was excellent. He was drooling over Michael Jordan's 993 Turbo S. Does anyone know where that car went?
So I got that question too.
Oh, all right. Yeah, this is a different person.
I don't have an answer for it.
I don't have an exact answer, but there was a thread on Renlist that someone linked me to earlier in the day when someone tweeted this at me, and I didn't look too deep into it, but somebody on Renlist claimed that they owned it recently. So it exists. I'm sure it exists somewhere. I do enjoy seeing. Do you watch The Last Dance, Spike? I'm enjoying seeing Jordan's car choices. They're fun.
I want to, but I remember we joke a lot about Scottie Pippen's car choices. If you Google Scottie Pippen Porsche, we always talk about how those are cars that you can't resell after Scottie Pippen had it. That there were a lot of, especially for some reason, professional sports players, NBA players, they build houses that really are a testament to themselves and their careers. But when you go to resell it, you know, who's buying that? Because it's so done for you,
yeah,
you know, with the Scottie Pippen door sills and everything else. I don't know about the Michael Jordan cars. I don't know what his taste was in cars, but...
So in The Last Dance, they show him with a couple interesting cars. They show him with two or three different Corvettes. Late C4 ZR1, then an early C5 when it first comes out. They show him with a Ferrari Testarossa. They show him with a Ferrari 550. They show him with a red...
Did he customize these cars?
No, they didn't really seem it. They seemed pretty fairly factory. That might be that might have some Callaway wheels on it, maybe, on that one.
Right.
I was surprised that he was so into the vanity plates. They all had vanity plates.
What do they say? I need to watch this show.
The one on the red Range Rover said TWO TRE. Two tray.
That's great.
And the one on the 993 just said air. Just AIR. Cool. I don't remember the other ones, but he had some pretty cool. I was surprised he was as into Corvettes as he was, but they're good for tall people. So I get that.
Very comfortable.
Like pretty normal cars. These do not look like NBA player cars. The ones that I'm watching.
He wasn't like super into the customizing. I've seen some other. It wasn't like Spreewell. You know, Spreewell really. He started going overboard with.
But that was also like a different generation.
Yeah.
Matt, would you imagine that just because Michael Jordan owned a car that would add value to it? I don't know that.
I think it would add
he's
some.
He's one of those guys.
I think it would add some if it was the right car. And I think the fact that it's featured in the documentary would help for sure. You know, seeing him pull up to practice on video in that 993 Turbo S, I think would add some value to it. Yeah, I do. It's not like
movie Le Mans and
not Paul Walker money. Yeah, no. Not Paul Walker money, not Steve McQueen money. But I think there's a
premium.
What about
Mike Tyson? Do you think he adds value to a car?
Maybe.
Does he add value to a Tiger?
Is it like white on white,
yes.
89 TR from when he was the champ?
That's funny, Zach. Yes. If you have a Mike Tyson Tiger, that's definitely worth more money. Tigers are kind of cheap after Tiger King. Did you see they're only like $2,000? Yeah. You get a Tiger. I get that. I relate to that. If I had known that, I'd get some Tigers. Why not?
Savannah cats are more expensive than Tigers.
Wasn't the whole thing with Tigers like people buy them as a cub and then they get too big and then they're like, I can't have this anymore because I have people.
That's the story with all wild animals. They're cute and then they kill. Alligators, monkeys, it's all the same.
When my dad was a kid, his father, my grandfather, went to Mexico on some trip and came back from Mexico to New Jersey on an aircraft with two baby alligators and brought them into the home and had them in a fucking bathtub in a bathroom. And apparently the story goes they lived for about a week and my grandmother put the wrong temperature water in the bathtub and killed them. Yeah, that was the story. But my grandpa straight up brought fucking alligators into their home.
What year was this?
late 60s.
So he was throwing the suitcase. They nobody checks. What the fuck? There's no X-ray. That wouldn't set off an X-ray. That's amazing.
I don't know. My grandfather did some weird shit, man. He was fucking
Tyson.
Nuts.
By the way, Tyson. I'm looking at some Tyson cars. He's got quite good taste in cars. He's got a Bugatti Veyron, Ferrari F50.
Oh, that's recent. Tyson was a patron of Willie Koenig back in the day. He had a Koenig Testarossa. I think that was converted into a spider. He had some crazy. He had some of those like Strosic Porsches and the Gimbala stuff. Tyson was real into the 80s
Super Diablo,
Euro
Lamborghini,
the Euro tuners, Super Diablo,
XJ220 Jaguar.
Wow,
and a nice color of silver. That's a nice car.
This list,
and then the Aston Martin Lagonda.
Anyone who has his an coolest Aston Martin choice. Lagonda is good with me. Anyone?
Yeah. Right, I take that back.
All right. I love Aston. Me and Bo Bachman did 20 minutes on Aston Martin Lagondas 2 weeks ago. We're such fucking nerds.
They're so weird. How long are they? 40 feet? 50?
Not as big as you think. They're not that. They're not as big as like a 70s Cadillac. They look that way, yeah. They're low.
Proportions.
Yeah. They're
amazing.
Cool.
Great door wedge. So weird looking. Pooperson has a Porsche question. He's shopping for his first 911. He's looking at a 997.2 C2 or C2S coupe. It's in LA. He's going to daily it and prefers a manual because he likes analog and doesn't want a $15,000 PDK failure.
Is there a question in here?
Yes.
What he wants. Buy it.
Should he settle for a 09 C2S PDK for $45,000 with a warranty from CarMax? Or should he spend the same money on a manual transmission one with no warranty?
Predicting the future, Matt Farah. Look into your crystal ball.
Yeah.
Will he have car trouble on his car we cannot look at?
You know, what do you want me to say? What is driving stick worth a warranty to you? I don't fucking know. There's a lot of these cars. You're really stuck on these two cars? Like, there's a bunch of 997s out there. You got to be willing to get on a plane and get one from somewhere else.
If you're willing to get on a plane, which is... Well, it wasn't an expensive ticket. I don't know what's going on now, but like that can save you
Vinny
tons
got
of money.
From Detroit, from Houston to Detroit for $17 on Spirit.
Okay, well there you go.
Really? Yeah, wow. Yeah, I really did.
Flew.
I would say expand your search, sir. Don't.
Yeah, everything's for sale right now, and it's usually buy the latest model with the lowest mileage you can afford, and try to just get a 911 experience. Nothing wrong with a warranty. I can't vouch for the CarMax warranty.
Yeah.
I Doug DeMuro, I think. He's done that a few times, right?
Doug abused the warranty to the point where they changed it. They didn't change the policies, but they made it more expensive.
Land Rover.
Yeah, they made it more expensive. He blew that shit up for everybody. He should have really told his friends about that deal before fucking
That's
it
awesome.
Up. Doug will be on the podcast May 29th. Doug is going to be our last show in this studio before we move.
He's great.
Awesome. He is great
with the cars.
All right. Anthony Lucano says, how old does a mint condition average car have to be cool? Like, is the car cool or
Ooh,
just the fact that it's mint
question.
Condition cool?
Well, the cycle, right? The cycle of cool, brand new cool, and then enthusiast cool, and then uncool, and then ironic cool, and then back to cool again. So right when it gets to ironic cool, that's like, holy shit, I haven't seen a clean one of those in years. Right then. Spike?
Ford Granada. That is a perfect Ford Granada.
There's someone up the street from me that has two mint condition 89 Toyota Corollas in white.
Wow.
Like, they bought them new, and they drive 6 miles a week to church or whatever. Like, I want to leave notes on these people's doors for sure.
Yeah.
None left like it.
I like old people cars that they bought new in the 60s or 50s, and they still have them. And they're just sitting outside. They're perfect, and they're driven like that. I would buy a Ford Granada because that's what my dad had growing up.
Well, they're out there.
We called it the ashtray. He smoked in it, and he never emptied the ashtray. So there was just ashes and cigarettes and holes and the suede seats.
What year was it?
It would have to be 79.
I really,
there, right?
Anytime I picture a Ford Granada, it's full of cigarette butts. I think they were issued that way from the factory.
People were full of cigarettes back then.
he drove around in this thing and it all over. Yeah, he had that red velour. That's what it was, a red velour interior. No, it wasn't that guy.
Oh, gotcha.
Did he? Did he smoke with the windows closed? That's the fucking grossest.
Of course. It's that so silver gross. Guy right there that you just have up
That's
there.
That's gross.
Guy. There he is.
Yeah. Real.
I paid for the cigarettes. I'm not giving a smoke away to everybody else.
Real.
I thought it was so classy. I was like, this is the classiest thing I've ever seen.
Just recycle.
The personal luxury coupe.
Wow.
You just had to push, and I'm not joking, you had to push the cigarette butts and ash out of the passenger seat.
Oh, God.
And if you complained, you got yelled at. It was not good.
That's pretty gross. Pretty gross. Trevor Moore is shopping for Macans. Is 70 to 75 grand the sweet spot for Macan? Like, do you option up an S or do you get a low option GTS?
Well, if you're going brand new, they have a different engine now. The GTS gets the 2.9 twin turbo V6 that's a version of the turbo, and the S has the 3-liter V6 that's the version of the older engine. So you can't just turn an S into a GTS anymore like you could before. So how important is that extra power to you? Because the rest of the car is going to be pretty much the same. You know what I mean? That's the real question. Is that engine super, super special? Like, no. It's a pretty nice engine, but I don't know. I would say for daily driver duty, get the S and customize it to your heart's content, because the extra power is not that significant in a car like that. And you can still get a Cobb or VF engineering tune on the S and get a little out of it.
Cool. We had a guy who said he's an air traffic controller, and Michael Jordan also had a custom tail number on his jet, which was N23-6MJ. So his player number is 23, had 6 NBA championships.
That is
pretty,
very gangster of MJ.
Fucking rad.
Ralph Lauren has a custom tail number on his Gulfstream 6, and it is, I think it is N722RL or something like that.
What's N77?
I don't know what that means. I just know that it's double RL at the end. I'm probably getting the numbers wrong.
I feel like if you just see RL with like on something expensive, it's probably him. Yeah. Seems like it. This guy said he loves the new content. Is there a car that Spike, Matt, and maybe Zuckerman and Jerry also disagree on the most?
Spike?
You and I disagree a lot about cars. I'm trying to, but do you mean like the three of us would disagree with Matt?
No. Like, I think, is there a car that, there's so many people, like,
Zuckerman,
you're going to have to line up somehow.
We're nuts, by the way, Matt, for liking the Morgan. That's one.
That's there one for sure. And Zuckerman also doesn't like modified cars.
But Jerry's
cars.
With us. He likes that thing. He wants one of them. Zuckerman drove that same car. And he has so many bad things to say. He won't even entertain a conversation about it. So
he will only look at it objectively. He won't see the joy. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What's a car that you two like disagree on a lot?
I mean, Zuckerman and Spike also don't really like modified cars in the way that I do. Like, they all really think that I made my 911 worse by doing what I did. And that's okay. I don't mind that they think that. But they all do think that.
Not worse.
Just, well,
no, it's a huge success for what you do. You just do different things with cars. We're more preservationists, and you're a modifier. They're both okay. I mean, it's the same reason we like Rod Emery, and we think he's amazing. I think, Matt, that you have really come a little more into our Porsche club, because you weren't really a big Porsche guy early on. And I think we've kind of moved towards you in the customizing and the modification department. I still think we're a little far away from each other, but
my next 911 will be a stock one. I'm gonna buy another one and I'm gonna leave it alone. I think there's a lot of virtue in that. I think having driven mine and then driven Alex Roy's, which is mine but stock, I see the virtue in the stock car. I think the controls are wonderfully light and easy to use for what it is, and mine being kind of racy, you know, it's got heavier steering and it's got a short shifter and it's got a race clutch, and I think there's a lot of virtue in just sort of kind of buying one and leaving it for what it is. Also, I think there's room for both
and experiencing like what they intended it to be. There's something really rewarding about that.
That's the addiction. When you get in something that's only has a few hundred miles and it was built in 1971, and you drive it, it's an unparalleled experience. You time travel back to 1971 and you feel a car in the way that it was intended and not restored, because restored cars generally feel a lot different than original cars. And it once you do it, you feel really, you're spoiled for life.
Well, that's why I kept asking Spike, like, well, how come you guys keep buying these low mileage cars? Because you always want, you're clearly have no problem putting as many miles on them as you feel like it. And he said, what did you say, Spike?
It's the, yeah. Who are we saving it for? The next guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This
yeah,
is totally. Why we're here. This is why you do it. Use up the miles. Use up the experience. That's what it's all about. If you can find it, that's yours. That those new miles, put 100,000 miles on it. Use up that experience and enjoy yourself.
Do you think that too many people are worried about selling it for the next person, and that means they are either buying a car that's so like too expensive for them, where they're like, ooh, I got to protect my investment. Like if they had bought a $10,000 car instead of a $50,000 car, that, you know, then they would drive it harder because they don't care about the depreciation as much.
I don't know about Spike, but it's been my experience that people just don't understand that miles are cheap. Like you can buy a car that's low miles and you can put miles on it, and those miles that you've put on that low mile car are cheap miles, because the value is still more than it was before. You know what I mean? Like you buy a 15,000 mile 911, you pay a premium for it, and over 10 years you drive it 2,000 miles a year. Well, now you're at a 25 or 30,000 mile. That's cheap miles. Right, Spike?
Here's where I think it matters most in the Porsche community. So I bought cars with 6,000 original miles and driven them up to 14,000 original miles, and still made a lot of money on the car. I experienced it for 10 years and drove it a lot, and it still had value. The cars that I think you're driving value out of more are, and I passed on a car because I had one, but I was offered a silver black Vashak Polak, originally sold there, 70 911S, you know, just perfection, that had 742 miles on it. I can remember, you can't drive that. 742 miles. And I went, what? And the number, by, you know, today's standards, it was cheap. It was like buying a pack of gum. And I went, that's outrageous. And I already had one. That car is a car that I think you can ruin by driving. It had the original tires and all the original everything. Some of you may have seen it out at the shows. That's a car I really regret not buying. Jerry passed on it too. You put miles on that one and take off the original everything, I think you are hurting the value of that a little more. But anything over that, you know, if it's got 2,000 original and you drive it to 5,000, we're talking about the same car.
It's the same. There's like classes, right? It's like if it's low enough that you can remember 742, you can't drive it. But if you know what I mean?
Good way to put
but
it.
But I had a car.
If it's low, you know, but not so low you're counting in individual numbers, that's a good place to be.
So I had a car that was all original, that had, you know, everything you would have wanted, low mileage. And that car 8 years in was hit. So the rear panel was hit and the back end was kind of destroyed on it. And I had the auto body shop. I said, look, you can't replace any of the metal. It's all original, but obviously we're gonna have to paint, just hammer it all out. And I thought for sure I had destroyed the value of that car, the originality of it. And then when it came time to sell it, they didn't care. I disclosed it. I said, did this happen? They go, we don't care. Look at the chalk marks on the engine. This is an amazing car. So, you know, that's what I mean. It's like, you don't want to be the guy we talk about all the time in Florida. We get a call about a big Porsche collection, all of these cars with no miles, and the guy dies, and the wife calls and goes, yeah, you know, he never drove any of them. He preserved them. And it was one of the saddest stories. This guy bought these things and never experienced them because he was worried about selling them on the other side. And then the poor guy dies and he didn't have any of the experiences that we're having, you know, that we have right now, those driving experiences.
Yeah.
For me, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. My car, my little red car, it was expensive. And I thought about it when I bought it. This is going to be expensive. But I thought about the last owner and how much money he spent to not drive it. For 10 years. He put 1,000 miles in 10 years, and I saw his receipts and went, well, if this is what I'm in for financially, I'm fucking driving this thing. And Harry Metcalf, Harry Metcalf said, drive it, because the more you drive it, the less it's going to break. And he was totally right.
Wow.
100% right. So and go, Harry Metcalf.
You're never going to care about the financial value of the car.
I don't give a shit about the miles. I honestly, the times I've spent driving it and taking people for rides in it and the reactions that, you know, you have whenever you bring that thing anywhere, and even just it is such a pleasant experience to drive that I'm so glad I get to do it. Mm-hmm. It's great fun. What else, Zacharys?
Can one of us comment on the driving experience difference between the Ariel Atom and an Exocet? Is the Atom worth paying 5 times more for street use?
Okay. Have you ever driven either of these things, Spike?
Nope.
I've driven both. Okay. And Atom for is a, it really feels like something that was built in a factory. Like it's one thing. You get it, you know, this one way. And it's, you know, obviously it's a fucking psycho death machine, but it is a totally coherent package, whereas an Exocet is really heavily dependent on a lot of different factors that may or may not be intended to work together in harmony. It's dependent on who built it and what they built it with, and it's a highly variable thing. As far as I know, you can't buy a complete Exocet from Exocet, right? I think you can buy a kit that you have to do shit to, right? But like, so Atoms are sketchy, but they have a rock bottom value. They're like Lotus Elises, where they get to a point and they're just never worth less than, you know, whatever, 35 or 40 grand. And they're raw as shit, and you have a rear engine driving experience compared to a front engine driving experience. And by the way, they're way better looking. Exocets, if you ask me, are really ugly cars.
Very true.
It's my opinion that cars with body panels are better than cars that don't have body panels.
The Atom does technically have some body panels, not many, but it does help.
I don't love Atoms, and it's not because there's anything wrong with them. I think for the same amount of money, you can buy a car that you're likely to live in a crash.
But that's the thing is, you know, the Exocet I drove was like a $15,000 to $20,000 project, and then the Nomad I drove was a $96,000 car.
Yeah,
and I think that. I haven't driven a street Atom, but like what it gives you is this like open air exposure, this manic driving experience, this kind of craziness. And if you get an Exocet that's set up well, it gives you that as well for fifth the price. But to your point, if you build the thing, are you good at building cars?
Yeah.
Because if you're not, your Exocet's going to suck. So it really depends on if you're an engineer or not.
Yeah. And for less than an Atom, you know, for if you split the difference between your Exocet and your Atom, you could probably get any number of nice factory engineered cars that will give you a cool, fast, open air motoring experience.
True.
You know.
All right. This weekend, this guy's going to be buying either a 2018 Alfa Stelvio Ti with 30,000 miles or a 2015 Macan S with twice as many miles. Both are 30 grand.
Oh, boy.
He's leaning towards a Macan, but he's worried about the higher mileage and reliability, which is the better way to go.
5-year-old used Porsche versus 2.5-year-old used Alfa Romeo. Yikes.
That's Spike? A conundrum. That's hand off that potato.
Alfa seems dangerous, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. CPO. Alfa seems
dangerous. When they were brand new, some of them had problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've driven the TI. The TI is the smaller engine one, right?
Mm-hmm.
That thing's got a crazy amount of turbo lag. Like so much like old school 80s Lancia Delta turbo lag. Like, and the Macan S has a lovely flat kind of power band.
It's a real car.
Twice as many miles, bro. Like, I don't know. I can't tell you about that car you're looking at.
Yeah.
But just generally, I'd rather probably be driving a Macan, I think. I would like to call FCA and book a new Stelvio, because I drove that the four cylinder one in Europe, and I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it either. And I would like to try the fast one. I'm sure they would have no problem with this.
Oh, here we go. All right.
Do they have a new GTV coming out?
I don't know. Do they? Alpha has new product. the fuck out of here.
I thought I saw that somewhere.
Really?
And, like, these cars looked real cool. Maybe it was an appearance package for the GTV.
I don't know.
2021, what do we know so far?
Oh, look at this, Spike. Maybe you do have something to it. It looks, if this rendering is accurate, it looks like a Giulia coupe.
Which is gorgeous. The Giulia
is not
so,
so
pretty.
Bad. That looks good.
No, but there was a racing livery too in it.
Well, I'm about the concept.
Right.
Get down on that. I like that. What else, Zach?
If you had $300,000, would you rather buy a Speedster or a GT2 RS? He said $300,000, your money.
GT2 RS. Spike?
Okay, first of all, it's the Alfa Romeo Giulia GTA.
Oh, Giulia GTA.
Oh, the GTA, I've seen that.
Yeah,
okay.
Look at this car. This looks pretty great.
The racing livery.
It's a little...
Yeah.
I don't know.
It looks like the Jaguar Project 8.
Right.
With the big wang and the wide body. That yeah, I'm
like
getting Jaguar Project
Alfa
8
Romeo
vibes.
Giulia.
It's like a 65? Well, maybe with the triangle.
No, that's not the one. The one with the yellow front.
The yellow front. Oh, that. Oh, so it's the same thing with a yellow front.
Jeez, that is not
And then there's yellow with white. And,
that's not good. This yellow is not good.
I like
good.
This.
No,
see,
no,
we disagree about
good.
That.
This
no,
disagree
I like
this.
This
They've turned
great.
It into a Supra. It's gone Supra.
I like it.
At the front end.
No, the Giulia, I think, is a gorgeous car. Gorgeous, gorgeous sedan. Yeah. And this does not help
Just
it.
Give it to me in blue with silver wheels, and we'll call it a day. And the comfort seats. And we're good.
See?
I hear they're leasing these things fucking cheap.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
Okay. GT2 RS.
Yes.
Or Speedster for your
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I am uniquely suited to tell you about these two choices. This is kind of what I dealt with the GT3 Touring and the GT2 RS, which is they're both amazing cars. But if I had to pick one, it would be the car that thrills me that they don't make a lot, which is the GT2 RS. That car is one of the greatest things. And maybe this is the car that you and I disagree about, Matt. I think this is one of the greatest feats of engineering. Someone told me, and I don't know if this is true, that Andreas Pruniger said, never sell that car because we'll never be able to make anything like this again. I don't understand how people are getting rid of them right now. I don't get it. This car is thrilling and fun and beautiful. The Speedster, an amazing thing to look at. Manual gearbox. No, it's not a coupe, so obviously you have a connection to the exhaust. Great balance and a beautiful thing. However, it feels like it arrived a little late, and we're ready for the 992. So.
Oh wait, no. I do you think they're talking about the new Speedster or a vintage Speedster?
Well, for 300,
I guess he means new Speedster. Okay, sorry. Continue, Spike. My brain went to a vintage Speedster,
I mean,
but
go
ahead.
For me, it's I like an extreme machine, but you really have to look at yourself and go, am I going to be comfortable with a giant wing and 700 horsepower and a sound that might annoy your neighbors when you start it every morning? Or are you the, you know, highway cruising back road Speedster down guy? You know, well, you'll have fun with that car, and it's a beautifully balanced machine. It's really a lovely creation with a unique sound, very 911. I think of it as a 911R cabriolet more than anything else. But you have to kind of look within. Or are you a monster like that? Do you want to do things that you've never done before in a car?
Yeah, I go monster for sure.
That's the GT2 RS. It's an incredible machine. It really is an incredible machine, and I can't say enough good things about it.
I'm not sure we disagree so much. I think that thing is awesome. I think that we are past the point with a lot of these cars where they're offering somewhat diminishing returns. Not so much with the GT cars but more with the 992, you know, the difference between a Carrera S and GTS and Turbo is getting quite blurred. And all three of those newer 992 series cars really offer, you know, it's you're listening to the same song, you're just playing it at different volumes, you know. But I get it. I think GT2 RS fucking rules. I would go Speedster because I think that I would not squander a Porsche 6-speed gearbox and a 4-liter engine given the chance. And I'm a top-down man myself. I have a wind-friendly hairstyle, so it's a little more me, but I understand.
You want to know something interesting that happened with the GT3 Touring? I felt like the car could go faster without me shifting the gears. And every time I got in the GT2 RS with a PDK, I realized what I was failing. That as much as I like shifting gears, I would rather do it on older cars, and I don't want to be a human being slowing down a machine that could go faster if it had the right transmission. And I wouldn't have said that until I owned the GT3 Touring and I learned that. But I learned that about myself.
All right.
There you go.
Just have a bunch of like more general stuff. This might be the last one. Well, let's see. Quick wash question. This guy is a Seiko SRP821. Should he get a Hamilton Khaki Mechanical next?
No.
Okay.
Next.
Why?
Great.
Because it's a middle. It's not a bump up from a nice Seiko.
You think he's going to sell the Seiko?
I don't know, but I think you're paying more money for what is not much more watch. I'm not that into Hamilton. You want to say yes? Say yes, Spike. Go ahead.
I like Hamilton watches.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a one. That's a one of
a one
Spike.
A one.
A one of a Spike and a no of a me.
All right. Crash12190 says, hi, guys. I currently have an NA Miata that makes 350 wheel horsepower.
Yikes.
Suspension, bushings. Is there anything that will really give me a similar experience for the money? He has 11 grand into this car.
Signed Travis Okulski of Russian Track.
Yeah. Nice.
That'll give you a similar experience
for 16 grand total.
For that kind of money? No, I think you're there, bro. That's pretty aggressive. A Miata with 350 at the wheels is a fast car.
In a short car. Yeah. In a twitchy car, depending. I mean,
he didn't say what the engine was. I mean, I would hope it's a V8. If it's a V8, then I bet you that car is fairly easy to drive, actually, because you'd have a nice even power band. If it's got some peaky ass turbo, I bet that thing's hairy as can be.
Either way, though, I don't think you can replicate that for 16. Yeah. Let's say he's in for 16 total. Yeah. No way.
I mean, I like the people I've met at Ariel, and I don't want to insult them because I think they make the thing and sell the thing that they advertise, and it does the thing that they say. But if it's me, I'd call Flying Miata first, and I'd say, give me that ND with the V8 and just thank you.
Yeah.
Because you still get airbags and real doors and a fucking roof and air conditioning and heat and a radio, and you've got this little Shelby Cobra. You know, basically.
That's kind of what this guy, that's what you've built, Crash. You've built the cheapest Cobra the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
And you will never find cocaine that is that cheap.
Except on a leader bike.
Yeah, get on a leader bike, and then you'll feel alive again.
All right, anything else worth addressing before we wrap this up?
Just a lot of buying questions, so we can save them for a crew show if we want.
All right, we'll save those. We got a crew show coming up. Spike's time is valuable. He's got to make that GT2 RS money. Other than, of course, the Spike's Car Radio podcast, in which I appeared last week, and it's a good episode. What do you want to plug, Spike? Anything?
I'm working for the new Matt Farah, who's got a YouTube channel, JF Motorsports. He's a big fan of yours, this young man.
I have heard that Jack is into making videos on YouTube, and we will plug.
It happens to be my son.
Let's plug his channel. Yo, go subscribe to JF Motorsports on YouTube. Hey, don't copyright us. Don't trademark infringement us, Jack. Go subscribe to JF Motorsports, Jack Ferriston.
This is Jack Ferriston, 12 years old. Now, that first video that you're looking at there got texted to me while I was smoking a cigar on a Friday night. And I realized he had been taking pictures of all the cars he sees in the driveway.
Cool.
Good for him.
Putting together little videos. And he's a huge fan of yours, Matt Farah.
Well, tell him I'll appear in one of his videos for him.
He made the Porsche Panamera GTS video just recently. And I tried to direct him. And all he would say is, this is not how Matt Farah does a lot. Just hold the camera and shoot.
That's hilarious. Oh, good for Jack. All right,
not
cool.
Not for me, the dad.
How'd you like that Panamera GTS? That thing rules, huh?
I did. The Sport Turismo, it was a delight. I wish we had normal life so I could do some kind of dad stuff in it and enjoy it. But, it's the when things... It really, for me, I kept thinking about Little League. Like how great it would be to have the kids in the car and throw all the equipment in and go back and forth. It's a great car.
It's hard to like review semi-normal cars when you don't have any normal activities to do with the cars. It's like,
yeah.
I had
really
March and April, I had a bunch of like crossovers and stuff, and I was like, what am I supposed to do with this Volvo? I have nowhere to go.
I know. I'm starting to do motorcycles right now. I'm
Are
about
you?
To go into Royal Enfield or Moto Guzzi.
Oh, good.
I got something else. Oh, an Indian, I think I'm going to get an FTR 1200.
Oh, fun. All right, cool. I'll borrow something and come ride with you.
Absolutely.
All right, listen to Spike and Paul Zuckerman and Jerry Seinfeld on Spike's Car Radio podcast, and occasionally myself as well. That's all for us today. What do we have later this week, Zach? Don't we have a show on Wednesday? And I can't remember who's on it at the moment because I'm blanking. Who are we doing live on Wednesday?
Ed Bolian.
Oh, yeah, Ed Bolian. VinWiki's Ed Bolian will be calling in on Wednesday from Atlanta. That is at 5 p.m. our time, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then we might have a crew show over the weekend, maybe. I don't know. And then we got Doug DeMuro next Thursday, the 28th, and we probably will shove another show in there, too, because we're going to be moving. And we got to stack them the fuck up. Spike, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, my friend.
All right.
Stay well.
I will. That's our show. The Smoke and Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. Peace.